Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Chairman of Extract Resources. Welcome back to the podcast, Colin. How's life?
Oh, life's not too bad. I guess we're all having different forms of weather around Europe, and I'm in Europe, and where I've been quite obviously seasonal weather, but not the over-the-top weather that some people seem to be having. So life's not too bad at the moment. If we talk about the weather, if we talk about other things, we're into a very strange world and a fairly problematic world, and an ever-shifting financial expectations. But I guess that we've got another 3 years to get to, well, longer than that, to get used to Mr. Trump and his ever-changing views on tariffs, on taxation, and his position relative to America's position relative to other countries. So but all in all, it's all part of life's lovely tapestry, so not too bad.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those tariffs towards the end of the podcast, but I just want to obviously talk about the news we saw at the beginning of July, where the company announced that they completed phase one drilling at the Silver King Copper Project in Zambia's Mumbwa district under a joint venture with Oval Mining, allowing Extract to earn up to 70%. Drilling highlights included 23 metres at 1.49% copper and 18.96 grams per tonne of silver, 9 metres at 4.68% copper and 38.67 grams per ton of silver. Yeah, and these all from the COPGIA prospect. So with sufficient data for an internal non-code compliant resource estimate, Extract is progressing mine planning and preparing for a 2,000 meter drill program at COPGIA. So tell us more, please, Colin, about progress.
Yeah, I think what do we draw from that? We draw from that when we first signed up the agreement that we were talking about a breach of pipe, we were just extremely high grade, and I think we reported grades as high as 50% copper. Absolutely intriguing on us, in as much as this breccia pipe was known to extend deeper, how much deeper we didn't know. And we were looking at something really relatively confined. And there was a suggestion, and only a suggestion, that 800 meters away was something similar, but much smaller. So these results you're seeing are the results of kind of stepping out both directions from the pipe. And so the good news for sure has to be that this chalcocite and these high-grade portions definitely still exist. They're very big runs that we're reporting. And I think shareholders, and we certainly are, the shareholders should be quite happy that we're building something up from an initial small breccia pipe. What are we doing? Obviously, the area is showing good potential for extension. There's a copy, which is a hillside, kind of a granite hillside, some 600 meters away, where we're encountering structures all over the place. We're mapping them. We're currently preparing on that same copy. We're preparing drilling pads, because you can't pull drills up. It's too steep. So we're making drilling pads so we can drill into it. So we may have a quarrying situation. We're expecting the ore body to plunge into the ground. And so therefore, if we locate it on the side of the copy, we know that it plunges in the ground. We're pretty sure we've got it at surface level anyway, because we've got exposures. A couple of kilometres beyond that, continuing beyond that, is a magnetic signature, which once again has to be probably some geochemistry and further geophysics. And we've got another, what we call the worm, which is towards Katumba. And that's 2 or 3 kilometres long, and that's got a magnetic signature. So we're currently deciding where to drill next, and we did refer to that 2,000-metre program, where to drill next. And we're not spoiled by Jove. We've got quite a few places to drill. And that pipe, you know, is isolated enough, despite all the other opportunities that I'm talking about, to be worked by a pit. And I think I've referred to it on your podcast before. It's so much like a kimberlite pipe. And a kimberlite pipe, they work beautifully. You open pit, and obviously there's the old pipe in the middle. But then when you want to go underground, if it goes deeper, and it does go deeper, we've proven that, you put a ramp outside the pipe, and then you cross-cut to the pipe at, say, 25, 40 metres, 30 metres. You cross-cut to the pipe, you step back along the drive. I'm sure you can imagine this. So think of a Coke bottle dipping into the ground. You've got a ramp at the side of the Coke bottle. Every 50 metres, you put a tunnel to the coke bottle, come back along the tunnel, drill long holes up into the pipe, bang, blast them, and then you go into the tunnel and then you just pull the broken ground with front-end loaders. And it's safe. The men aren't in the stope. It's highly productive. You can pull what rate you like. And you truck up the ramp. And then when the ramp's too steep, of course, that's the end of the ore body. But the ramp won't be too steep too soon. And we don't know if the ore body goes down to 500 meters. But certainly the first 100, 150 meters will be by open pit anyway. So we're currently designing that, as shall we call it, about phase one. Phase two determines what's the size of this animal, you know, how big is it? But one thing we are sure, these high-grade situations continue. And, you know, this is probably the oldest mine in Zambia, I'm learning as we go into the archives and study. It was first worked, I think, in 1892. There was reference to these chalcocite caves. So that's what the old men call them, the chalcocite caves. So it's the oldest mine in Zambia, and it was worked for its silver, not for its copper. Very, very interesting. So we're working on, and of course, the metallurgy. We're working on the metallurgy. We got a little bit of a scare initially. We thought there might be a little bit of zinc there, which would irritate the flotation technique. But we found that that's insignificant. So yes, it floats. That we're pleased about. And it's not too it's not metallurgically complex. So a lot of things have fallen in place, gents, and for the Silver King project.
Yeah. Absolutely. It sounds very interesting. I'm sure you talk very passionately about it, Colin. So it's very interesting to hear your insight. So I want to just talk about the joint venture, because there's been a bit of confusion on some of the boards related to the, you know, the JV between Extract and Oval/Cooperlemon, and effectively allowing Extract to gradually earn a larger share of the Silver King project itself. So as per the RNS, that, you know, step one, effectively Extract had an 18 month period to spend $500,000 on drilling and exploration. And obviously now that money has been spent and the first phase is done, Extract has earned a 51% stake in that project. So I'm assuming that step two, if Extract wants to increase its stake to 70%, it must spend another $1 million over the next 2 years. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, absolutely. Would you like me to explain the agreement? And I think I know where you come from, Phil. If you're suggesting that there's either ambiguity or I think that some shareholders or observers made the comment that Cooperlemon have the right to buy to so that they're 17 worth 30. I had a look at the RNS, and you could probably understand that sort of ambiguity developing. But here's the actual situation. You're absolutely right there. We've got 18 months. I think that's up in October. We have to serve notice that we intend to continue with the project. At that stage, we've earned our 51 and we go up to 70%, provided we agree to spend $1 million, as you put it, over a couple of years. Now, obviously, at the end of 2 years comes determination. And I think that we, by virtue of the fact we state it twice, there's the ambiguity. But at determination stage, you keep, if there's an ore resource, each party keeps what it's got. So obviously at that stage, we've got 70% by virtue of the fact we've agreed to go to spend the 1 million. And we will, of course, spend the 1 million because that's determination stage. So we've got our 70%. If we find 300,000 tons or more contained copper, we've got 70%. Now, here's why whilst it was necessary for that explanation on the option agreement, was if we get to 500, it was thought by Cooperlemon that really they didn't want flippers as partners. And that's always been the Cooperlemon approach. And I don't blame them one bit for that. So if we found a very large deposit and we found it very quickly. And you should recall that within 11 kilometers is a project that I think when we signed the agreement, if it had been sold, but it's been sold for a tidy sum recently. So they were aware of the fact that, you know, it might be a very saleable project. So if the project was sold and there was, you know, at the 2 years and there was more than 500,000 tons of contained copper, they dropped back and we share the proceeds. So we share the proceeds, but they're required to contribute to exploration, and the cost of the sale would be shared. So there's fairly very, very equitable agreement, and the underlying was that we earn our way to 70. If, however, we find something with high tonnage, because let's face it, it doesn't take you a long time at 4% and 5% copper to develop 500,000 tons of contained copper. And there was a quick sale, then they felt that we go to 50-50. But in the normal scheme of things, if we develop a mine, whatever we do, it's 70% to extract, 30% to Cooper Lemon. And our commitment levels are 500,000 to be spent within 18 months, which finishes in October. And we serve notice on them that we intend to go up to 70% by spending $1 million. And that's the status, that's our status. And the contained, and if we do get 500,000 tons of contained copper, then we go to 50-50. So that really is how the agreement stands, and there is no ambiguity.
What else are we looking at in extract then, Colin?
Extract, as you know, have gone into Morocco and raised a few eyebrows, I think, that we did there, Kevin. Don't like using this word, because it doesn't apply to extract or anything I do or my colleagues do. We weren't ambulance chasers when we decided to go to Morocco, because we're after antimony. And antimony is a key critical metal which is found in Russia, China, all of the wrong places where it might be needed, because it's military. It's military. It's most of its uses are military. It's very resistant, and so it goes into a lot of products for the military industry. And the Americans have just formed a committee, and it's been labeled as a critical metal. And the Americans are out there looking for antimony wherever they can find it. It's not a used market, but we went on a sortie to Morocco. And my knowledge of antimony is usually as thick as your finger. Veins here, veins there. You can't join them up. Very hard to work. Got to take a lot of ways to get a little bit of antimony. And so I was very pleasantly surprised when I found that no, the antimony was as thick as 3-4 meters in some places, and actually saw open stopes. So you would have tunnels underground, which was mined on the antimony, which is typical artisanal mining. You know, they don't do any extensions to the ore body off a main tunnel. So they mine a simple tunnel. The antimony is in the middle of the tunnel, and they take the waste. Obviously, more sophisticated artisanal, but still artisanal miners, they chase the reef up and add some quite meaningful big open stopes. In fact, some big cathedral-type stopes. We also saw open pits, and there really weren't open pits either, because there were more quarries than open pits, because there were mountains. They were sort of working the face of mountains and chasing, exposing the vein, and then sort of rudimentary, I call it rudimentary, benching to access the antimony. So we built up a position, a really nice position in antimony. I can't talk any further about it yet, because we haven't revealed all our details to the public. But when we do, it'll be good to have a podcast. But antimony is really motoring as a metal. It's not found in many places in the world. Where it is found, it's difficult to make for it to be found in the quantities and thicknesses to make a mine of it. So we regard ourselves as pretty fortunate in the positions and the country we decided to locate ourselves in, Morocco. Just as a side note, Morocco is very favourable to mining. There's been a few deals announced there during this year. They're blessed with mining. You know, they've got copper, they've got silver, they've got tungsten. Now we're into the antimony story. So it's a country blessed. You can get around it very easily. Double, triple lane highways. Infrastructure that works very, very well indeed. And quite a very sophisticated community in which to work, with a welcome sign on the door. So the initial thoughts from our sortie into Morocco are very, very positive indeed. And we look forward to extending our platform there. That's another key happening, really, if you like, in extract. But Silver King is, if we talk about timing, what's getting immediate, what could be turned from exploration into pre-development, into development, into production, Silver King is showing us real legs.
Yeah, having visited the site, we can see, I mean, there was obviously quite a lot of mining there in the past, and super grades for both the copper and the silver in those breccia pipes. So, yeah, I think if you can prove beyond a doubt that the bowl that is there is extendable, then I'm sure the potential for that to be even the 500,000 tons of contained copper is probably there.
Yeah, we don't know, Kevin. Yeah, but there's certainly that first round of drilling destroyed the single pipe myth. Not myth, it wasn't a myth at the time, but it was, I think a fairer word would be suggestion, because unless you drill some kind, called it a myth. The original suggestion was destroyed by our drilling program. We've certainly got a self-contained pit there with 1, 2, 3, 4 chances to add a lot of magnitude to what we've originally found.
Yeah. Colin, I alluded at the beginning there talking about copper and everything, and certainly let's just talk a little bit about Trump's latest tariff he announced the back end of last week, where he said he was going to plan to impose a 50% tariff on copper. And obviously, you know, we've looked at the that's how much copper is consumed in the US, and they effectively are consuming twice as much copper as they actually produce. So just talk us through your thoughts on this new tariff.
It's difficult to apply logical thought to this debate, Phil, because you started absolutely right. They consume two times more than they produce. So it seems rather inept to put a tariff on everything, on something that you need. That's the first contribution I would make. How on earth do you do that? A little story, and wanting to see the funny side of life. About 10 years ago, somebody said to me, "Back copper, when you mine it, Colin, how long does it take to grow back again?" And there's a question I couldn't answer, and I just passed it, and I thought, well, that's about it, daftest question I've ever heard. But last week, Trump has said, we're going to produce our own copper. We're going to make our own copper. And it almost sounded like going back a few years. But let's assume that that was just words. And he assumed that the copper in Arizona and Nevada was going to be mined, that it wasn't going to make copper, that the copper in Nevada and the copper in Arizona was going to be mined. What Mr. Trump doesn't realize, that's when you make that decision, it doesn't happen next week, next year. You can probably put 10 years in front of it. So basically, he's got the tariff situation for 10 years while he develops the copper industry. And, so it's absolute nonsense that he feels that he can revive or basically get anywhere near America's consumption requirements. And then you've seen the race now, this tremendous arbitrage going on between the London Metal Exchange and the Chicago Metal Exchange. And they're even parking boats off Hawaii to say they're in territorial waters with their copper on board, so therefore it's tariff-free. So there's sheer panic in the trading market. Now, that's short-lived. You don't build a mine around that story, but copper futures are going to be all over the place. Interestingly, I think America has already built up 1.25 years of copper. So that could have a strange effect on the market, because you've lost one of the markets, basically has gone self-sufficient. So I'm taking the view that I can't really tailor my thoughts on, is it a good industry to be in around about the shenanigans of short-term shenanigans of, will there be tariffs? Won't there be tariffs? I'm more interested in the long term. And the long term, Phil, Kevin, is as strong, if not stronger, than it ever was. I mean, I still go back to India and its infrastructure. I go back to electric cars. Yes, it's stalled, but not that much. And then infrastructure requirements and just about everything you make needs some copper. Then the third world development and cell phones and fridges and cars and second cars. Copper has got an absolutely remarkable future. So if he imposes his tariff, this is going to be probably one of the biggest own goals of all time.
Yeah,
because he's laboring under the illusion that he can restart a copper industry in Arizona and Nevada. Yes, maybe. First of all, you've got to find it, and there are a few discoveries. But to bring them actually into production is 10 years. So short term disruption, which might be price hikes, price depression. I could see copper shooting up to 12. I could see it dropping down to 9.2. But the real world says stable copper, 11,000 and. Australia has been convinced of that for some months, and I've been convinced of it for some years. A stable copper of $11,000 sounds about right to me.
So Extract asset in Australia valued at exactly zero right now might be worth a few pounds.
Absolutely, absolutely, Kevin. It's forced to be in the next generation, and I think because we've got a grade just below par, a lot of people have written it off. But if you looked at that last round or sorting test we did, very, very, very promising. Why don't we start drilling there again? Why should we? We've got 1.3 million tons of contained copper. It's open to whichever end you look, except the east, and Ascot is completely open. But we know we're going to get much of the same. The thing now is to, is desk research, more work on ore sorting. But Kevin, the industry is looking now for a stable price, an indication of stable price. I've got no doubt in my mind the day we see 11,000 as a run and a continued run on copper, there'll be a queue at the door for Bush Ranger. We're keeping it alive. As you know, all the permits were renewed this year. So it's got a, you know, we've got time is on our side. The work we need to do on ore sorting won't cost more than $100,000. So I agree with you. It's going to have its day, but you can't force its day. Let copper force its day. I know a lot of people, and I was very disappointed, and I think a lot of people are very unhappy that we just didn't get, you know, we didn't get 0.35s and 0.37s instead of 0.24s and 0.27s. So close, but 35,000 meters, only one hole failed to go through significant lengths of mineralization, Kevin. 35,000 meter drilling program. Bush Ranger will have its day, I am absolutely sure. What we've got to be careful of is don't get in panic mode and try and monetize it in some deal which really is not a good deal for the shareholders. That's what we've got to be careful of. And because the deals will come, it's not, but you don't accept the first one what goes through the door, because I'm afraid, you know, I think with Bush Ranger, patience will be a virtue. I really think that. So, you know, I can't apologize enough to our shareholders, but how can I apologize? I set off with a drill program aimed at testing this ore body. We stuck 35,000 meters of drilling in it. Everyone went through mineralization, and we've got 1.3 million tons worth of copper. That copper is not yet the right grade to lead to a mine, but it is very close and is demonstrating that it can be sorted to get to a grade that does lead to a mine. Not a spectacular failure, is it, Kevin? Is it, Phil? When you look at it, you know, the fact that you hit the bar, or you hit this, you know, you just went past the goalpost. That's what happened. But Bush Ranger's there, and Bush Ranger will be in the next generation of big copper mines. I'm confident, but there's no point in going into a great big drill program, because we've got things which can bring more immediate value to our shareholders. Silver King being one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Silver King could be a tier two, tier one asset easily if the drilling goes as planned. And, you know, I think those silver grades, we're looking at silver touching $40 now.
Yeah.
Those silver grades are effectively going to pay for the whole thing.
If you have the silver grade will pay for all the operating costs.
If you have 3 ounce, 100 grams per ton of silver, and you have much higher grades than that in some places, you got 3 ounces of silver, that's $120 per ton. How much does it actually cost you per ton to do all of these things?
Kevin, that's one and a quarter percent copper equivalent almost. So, you know, I mean, the copper comes for free. It'll pay all the working costs and there'll be some change. You could actually make a mine on the silver values.
Yeah. So, you know, I think people need to wake up and realize that, because it's very possible that silver goes to $50, $60, $70, $80 an ounce in the next year or two.
Yeah.
Just on getting the right ratio back to gold, still 1 to 85 or, you know, more, I think. And that's if the gold price doesn't go up. So, yeah. You know, which I fully anticipate it will. You cannot print $3 trillion more dollars and think there isn't going to be more depreciation in the value of the US dollar. You can't do it.
You're absolutely right. When you're developing a small mine, it's not like developing a big porphyry. You really have got you've got time to bring these things into production very, very quickly. Small plants, open cut mining, contracted. You're not exactly into rocket science.
And having visited Silver King, there's a lot of ore just lying around there as well. I mean, like, it's an open pit, so there is a lot of ore that would make this thing move quickly if you put some processing facility there and went for it.
That's absolutely right. That's our objective to first of all design a mine, develop a mine. Having designed it, and when we know what shape it is, what it's going to cost, then meantime we will continue with our exploration all around the property. Okay. And the property is big now, much, much bigger than it was. So it's, you know, it's we're very pleased with Silver King.
Good. Okay, well, I guess we've talked long enough there. And, you know, we just say, Colin, it's always a pleasure to have you on and giving your insights on not only the projects, but obviously, you know, the wider markets and copper, et cetera. So we'll just say on that note, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, thanks very much for appearing back on the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.